Nuketown Radioactive number 58 for Wednesday, October 31st, 2007. On this episode of Nuketown Radioactive, I talk about chess and kids, the impending arrival of NaNoWriMo, Geek Dad blogs and podcasts, and offer some thoughts on the fourth edition of Dungeons & Dragons.
My friends, geek dads travel in packs. Here comes Ken Newquist with Nuketown Radioactive.
Well, many thanks to Doug Grapsom of Geek Acres for that spiffy new intro. I am Ken, and this is Radioactive, and yes, I am getting out a new show in a fairly timely manner, and there's a good reason for that. It's because it's October 31st, Halloween, and that's a pretty big deal for most kids in the country, and as a result, parents in the country as well. But the bigger news is that NaNoWriMo starts tomorrow. That's right. The National Novel Writing Month begins tomorrow, and I will be taking part in it. And this basically means, as I was talking about last time, that I have to write 50,000 words between November 1st and November 30th. And, well, I'm giddy with anticipation. I actually, I was on a message forum today, and I saw a post I made, and I saw the date was November 1st, and I kind of panicked a little bit, because I'm like, wait, it can't be November 1st yet. I'm not quite ready. I still have to get my Knights of the Dinner Table column off to the editor. I still need to record one last podcast. I still need to do this. I still need to do that. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. It's still Wednesday. I still have time to get these things done. So, took a deep breath and got back to work. So, I'm not going to be talking too much about the novel itself, mostly because I kind of adhere to the same philosophy that Monty Cook does, and he talked about this in the recent episode of Have Games Will Travel. I think it was either 100 or 102, where he was talking about a book that he was working on, and he didn't want to give it away. He didn't want to talk about what he was doing, in large part because it was kind of pent up. You know, you have this desire as a writer to put something on paper, and if you spend too much time thinking about it or talking about it, what ends up happening is that desire to write kind of evaporates, because you've done it, right? You've already told somebody what it's about. You've got the cool idea out of your head. So the idea is not to do that, not to talk about it as much until it's actually done. So I think what I will do is, well, adhere to Monty's philosophy, and I'm not really going to talk about it. I'll probably be talking about the process on upcoming podcasts and talking about how things are going and letting people know what the word count is, but I won't be talking about the actual story. Once everything is done and the thing is hopefully in the can, I'll probably come back and describe what it was about and, you know, whether or not I think it's worth proceeding with and going back and doing the long, hard job of editing and, you know, what might actually come of it if it was actually any good. But for now, I'm going to focus more on the process and less on the content. And I hope that doesn't seem like too much of a tease, but I think that's going to be the best way to actually get the thing written. So there's one thing I wanted to talk about that happened between the last podcast and this one that I thought was pretty cool, and it kind of caught me off guard, and it's this. Jordan has started playing chess. She decided that she wanted to learn, and she went to the library with my wife Sue, and she got out a book on how to play chess. And now we're reading this book before she goes to bed, and we've played a couple games of chess, and it's really cool because she's four, but she's interested in chess. And I think part of this is because we have this chess set that it's a combination checkers and chess set. So she's been playing checkers and she really enjoyed checkers. And she saw the chess set and she just got interested in the pieces. And I think at some point Sue had told her that I used to play chess and that her grandma used to play chess. And that, I think that got her excited to want to play more stuff with us. So for whatever reason, and let's not forget that, of course, there are queens in chess, which implies princesses, right? So she's interested in chess, and It's really cool. The way we're starting it out is, and this is where having the kids' guide to chess was actually really helpful, even though it's designed for more like 10 to 12 year olds. They recommended starting off with a limited set of the pieces. So the first game we played was just the pawns, and that kind of taught how to move the pawns down the board. And then the second game we played, we added rooks in, and at Jordan's insistence, we also included in the kings and the queens. And it worked really well because it's a subset of the larger pieces. You don't have to remember how to do everything. You don't get in knights, which tend to be pretty confusing for people. And she really enjoyed it. You know, it was just fascinating to see her kind of sitting there and kind of starting to reason things out and starting to think about the fact that you always have to think one move ahead, or at least at least one move ahead in chess. And that's a pretty cool thing. It's a pretty cool skill to learn. I know that it was one thing that's really helped me out in terms of programming or writing or just whatever, that ability to just kind of sit there and think out the different scenarios that you had to do when you were playing chess, I've found really comes into play so many times in life. And I'm just really excited for her to learn this skill and just to learn the game and to be able to just kind of hang out as father and daughter playing chess. I mean, it was something that I always wanted to teach her, and I hoped that we would get to do when she was older, and I'm hoping that she'll stay interested in it. I mean, that's the thing, of course, right, with four-year-olds or five-year-olds or really little kids, is their interests kind of waver. But she seems interested, so I'm hoping it'll keep up. And if not, well, that's okay. Maybe we'll revisit it later on. But for now, we are having a blast playing chess.
In a world where evil supervillains run amok and corrupt superheroes care more about their hair than justice, one woman is caught in a web of manipulation. Keepsie Branson just wants to run her bar. She doesn't want to think about her old dreams of being a superhero or her tired ambitions to save the world. But the facts remain that Keepsie and her friends have powers too, and they will soon be needed as Seventh City falls into chaos. And no one knows who are the good guys and who are the bad. Playing for Keeps is a free audiobook from Murr Lafferty, available at playingforkeepsnovel.com.
So in Netheads this week, we're going to be talking geeky parenting. The first is the Geek Dads podcast, which is a podcast that was spawned by the Wired blog of the same name. I've only just started listening to it, but it seems like a good mix of tech and parenting with a roundtable discussion of life and geek dadhood. They're currently running, and I think this is just really, really cool, but they're currently running a contest to build a mouse trap powered contraption with your kids. And the winner gets a Lego Star Destroyer, which is just freaking awesome. Because, you know what, guys? I really, really, really want a Lego Star Destroyer. I don't know where the heck I would put the thing, but having seen it, oh my God, it would be so freaking awesome. I guess I'm getting too excited about the Star Destroyer and not excited enough about the podcast, but man, they're really cool. So anyway, it's an interesting podcast. I just started listening to it, but I think, you know, if you're looking to get that intersection of parenting and geekdom, it's really good for that. So you can check it out at blog.wired.com/geekdad. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was The Simian Farmer, which is a blog by a geek dad of two young boys who talks about life, home improvement, parenting, and geekiness. In other words, something that if you've liked what you've heard here, then you'll probably like The Simian Farmer as well. You can expect to find anecdotes, video, photos, and plenty more. It's an amusing diversion for your morning RSS reading, and I definitely recommend it. It's been something that I've been following on and off for the last couple of months, and I've certainly enjoyed it. There's certainly enough things that he's done with his kids that make you go, that's pretty cool. And now that I'm a geek dad of a boy myself, I can start to relate to some of the things that he's encountering with his boys, because at least at this age, there are definitely some differences between little boys and little girls. You can find the blog at simianfarmer.blogs.com/simian_farmer. And of course, there will be links to both of these blogs and /podcast in the show notes.
Who in the heck is MAMPA? Emma's a geek podcaster parent who's letting her flag fly and helping you to raise your next generation right.
We're big geeks, and we love it.
She's a single mom. She is gorgeous.
Emma talks books, movies, anime, really, whatever she wants.
She is brilliant. She is amazing.
Emma and PA is a great podcaster, but she suffers from an embarrassing lack of leather.
Did I mention she was hot?
Who is MA and PA? No one can tell you who MA and PA is. She must be experienced.
To be part of the MA and PA experience, head on over to www.bl8tn.net. You should go there right now. Or else.
Better late than never, right?
So the big news in gaming circles, or at least in my gaming circles, is the upcoming release of Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition. A whole bunch of years ago, in 1999, I wrote a column called Give 3rd Edition a Chance, which was basically talking about the fact that, hey, 2nd Edition D&D had been out for a while, had a lot of stuff broken with it, had a lot of things that were really frustrating, and we didn't really know what was going to be happening with D&D 3.0. We thought, well, it could be an improvement, it could not, why don't we wait and see, and panic later, you know, try the game, see what happens, go from there. So flash forward 7 years later, and we're looking at a new edition of the game, and it's coming out in May of 2008. And I gotta say that the overall enthusiasm for 4th edition, at least in my gaming group, isn't nearly as great as it was for 3rd edition. And I think the reason for that is, although 3rd edition has its foibles, and it has its frustrations, certainly in the form of games slowing down at higher levels, an overemphasis on game mechanics at the expense of role-playing, especially when you compare it to games like Battlestar Galactica or Serenity or Spirit of the Century, where role-playing is really ends up front and center, or at least an integral part of the overall game. In 3.0, things can get pretty mechanical. It can seem like you've just got a bunch of wandering stat stacks going through the monster maze and trying to slay things and trying to get through challenges. And I personally find it a little bit frustrating, but overall, it's still D&D. It still ultimately gets the job done. And if we don't play characters above 15th level, well, that's just kind of the price you pay for the system that we have. So all of us also have a huge number of books. It wasn't too long ago that D&D 3.5 came out, which was the revised edition, and we bought the updated books for that. And I think at this point, we all have libraries, we all have a lot of stuff that we haven't even tried yet from 3rd edition, so no one is really clamoring the way we were at 2nd edition for a new version of the game. Nonetheless, a new version of the game is coming out, and we're starting to talk about it. We're starting to think about, you know, is this something we want to do? What are we going to do this time around? I got to say, for the record, I'm not opposed to staying with 3.5. When Wizards of the Coast killed off the print editions of Dragon and Dungeon, that really killed the big reason for me to keep up with D&D. I liked the print editions, and so far, from everything I've seen with D&D Insider, which is going to have new electronic versions of Dragon and Dungeon online, I'm not impressed, and I'm not really pleased with it. I mean, Dragon and Dungeon coming in the mail every month got me excited about the game. Going to Wizards' website, having to deal with Gleemax, having to try and log into the damn thing, it's just more frustration than anything else, and it's not inspiring me to want to keep up with D&D. And honestly, I think we could probably get a manageable version of 3.5 working by jotting down the books that we're going to use in a given campaign, and redlining any prestige classes, feats, or spells we didn't feel fit in with what we were trying to accomplish. And there's something else about 4th edition that when it was first announced kind of just didn't sit right with me. And basically it was this. There was a column of Sage Advice where it was said that there would be no conversion guide from 3rd edition to 4th edition. And it recommended that people wrap up their existing 3.0, 3.5 games and that they start over at first level with 4th edition. And, you know, to give you some background, my gaming group's been together for more than a decade, and we've been playing in Greyhawk for most of that time. And, you know, we don't want to start over again. We don't want to
scrap everything and go to some new campaign setting and start from scratch with 4th edition just because Wizards tells us so. We want this to work with Greyhawk. Now, they've backed off from that article somewhat, saying that yes, you will be able to convert a character thematically, but there's going to be no one-for-one conversion. Now, given the fact that there's a huge number of rules that have been spawned by 3.5, that's not necessarily unreasonable, but I'd really like to be able to see some sort of basic conversion guide that says, okay, if you had a straight class fighter in 3rd edition, this is how that fighter is going to be reflected in 4th edition, even if it's more of a series of articles than it is a true conversion guide like we got from going from 2nd edition to 3rd edition. It would be nice to have something that's going to serve as a bridge between the two games, rather than Wizards just saying, oh, yeah, well, scrap what you got and start all over again. I'm most concerned about the idea of the wowification of Dungeons & Dragons. And what I mean by this is basically, there's no big secret that Wizards of the Coast is saying, well, we want to capture some of the market that World of Warcraft has. We're the ones who created the whole idea of wizards and fighters and people running around playing this game and slaying orcs and fighting dragons and getting the treasure. We want a slice of that action that World of Warcraft has. We want to capture some of that buzz. We want to get some of our players back when it really comes down to it. So, to that end, they're modifying Dungeons & Dragons to mimic a lot of the stuff that you see in massively multiplayer games, prominently WoW, but these kind of things show up in other games. And one of the ideas is that, you know, classes should be able to do something every single round. Even if a wizard has blown all of their spells for the day, or a cleric has blown all of their spells for the day, they're still going to be able to do something arcane or divine on any given round. Same thing for fighters. They're always going to be able to have some special maneuver that they can pull, or paladins, and so forth and so on. And the thing that bothers me about this is that this is radically different from the approach that have been taken before, and it's radically different from what would fit with our Greyhawk game, which is a relatively low to medium powered setting. It's not the Forgotten Realms where everybody's got these hideously powerful magical abilities. It's something a little bit more low key, and I think that the nice thing about 3rd edition, or the various 3rd edition family of games, is that you could scale it up. If you wanted to, you could have a pretty low magic setting, or you could have a high magic setting, and it was just a question of, you know, tweaking things. With 4th edition, I don't get that feeling. I kind of get the feeling that things are always on, and it's going to be hard to turn off some of these class abilities or some of these talent trees. So I'd really kind of concerned about how this game is going to scale from the low end to the high end, at least in terms of setting. So that's definitely a real concern for me. Now, I do think that one of the big mechanical type things that will ultimately decide for me whether or not I like it is how they work in the action point mechanic. We understand that there's going to be something like we had with action points in 3.0 and with D20 Modern, but we're not quite sure how this mechanic's going to work. And I'd love to see something along the lines of Savage Worlds or Battlestar Galactica or Mutants and Masterminds that have a similar kind of action point thing, but are using it as a reward for role playing. So when somebody does something cool in game, or they're particularly true to their character, or they just, you know, do something that entertains the group, you award them with a hero point or whatever you want to call it, and then those have in-game effects that are more than just dice bumps. For example, in Battlestar Galactica, you can use action points to actually buy changes to the game. You can say, okay, well, I want to modify the plot in this way, and these are these are the points that I'm going to spend to do that, which is a really cool mechanic. I'm not saying that Dungeons & Dragons has to mimic that exactly, but I like the idea of built-in rewards for role-playing, particularly in D&D, which can turn into something of a grind fest, because the only way that you're advancing is by killing stuff. So, what are we going to do? Well, I think this is what we're going to end up doing, just from what I've talked about with my friends. I think we're going to do the same thing we did with 3rd edition, which is we're going to run a short 4 to 6 month campaign using the core rules of 4th edition and see whether the improvements and changes warrant an upgrade, warrant us switching over entirely from 3rd to 4th. I actually have a campaign idea already in mind for this, which I talked about on Nuketown.com a while back, which is Planetorn. The idea behind Planetorn, which I had originally proposed as being a big, hairy, audacious campaign, was that we would all play characters that adventure through the planescape, trying to figure out what had caused a massive planar storm that's destroying the various material planes. and I would let people play whatever they wanted to. I'm somewhat infamous in my D&D campaign for forbidding character, class, race combinations that other people might think were just fine. Like, for example, elven paladins are not something that I allow, or dwarven wizards. They're just things that have never been part of Greyhawk, and I don't want to ever see them introduced into Greyhawk. But with Planetorn, the gloves are off. You can do whatever you want. If you want to have a halfling paladin, have at it. If you want to have a dwarven super archmage, go for it. I don't care, because it's Planetorn. The idea is that everything's being mixed up. Now, my original thought was that we would run Planetorn just by pulling rules in from every 3.0, 3.5 book, third-party book, whatever, that had ever been published, and just kind of mash them all together. So you'd have Will of Time rules sitting up against maybe some D20 modern magic rules with a little Call of Cthulhu magic mixed in. But the idea will work just as well for 4th edition, which is just to say, here's the rules. Here's what's possible. Here's the cosmology that they've saddled us with. I guess I'm being a little too negative. But here's the new cosmology that 4th edition's come out with. Here's the new gods. Okay, let's run with it. Let's have a big-ass battle out amongst the various planes. Let's go to the Hells and figure out how to battle devils. Let's go to the Abyss and see how we can fight demons. Let's go to Limbo and see what lurks there. And I think it could end up being a pretty good combination of new and old, and I think it would do a really great job of putting 4th edition through its paces. So this is what I've proposed, and so far everybody seems to be going along with it. In the meantime, we're just going to keep an eye on 4th edition, see what the new posts are, debate what we think about their impact on our game, and, you know, just kind of try and keep an open mind. I think ultimately where this may all come out is that 4th edition could be a really great game. It could be an awesome game. I'm just not sure that it's going to be D&D. And it may be that we end up playing 4th edition for some games that are spawned by the latest and greatest stuff that Wizards of the Coast has come out with. And when we need to play Greyhawk, well, we fall back on the 3.5 rules.
Are your players unfocused? Do you have nothing planned? Don't know what to do?
Maybe we can help.
TheGameMasterShow.com.
So that will do it for this edition of Nuketown Radioactive. I don't know when the next one's going to be coming out because, well, November is going to be a pretty freaking busy month. In addition to NaNoWriMo, I'm going to be having 2 game reviews for sci-fi that I'm going to need to knock out, and some other miscellaneous projects that will inevitably crop up. So I'm going to be pretty freaking busy. I do hope to get out some podcasts just updating people on my word count, how things are going with the project, and, you know, maybe offering a few insights here or there on, you know, bits of wisdom learned while slaving away on the novel. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a lot of work. And I think folks would like to kind of keep up with that particular project. So that's kind of the plan. Now, talking about keeping up with the project, there's one other little thing I want to add, which is this. Sue and Jordan have informed me that they're going to give me a little bit more encouragement in the form of a kind of thermometer that they're going to put on the refrigerator. And this thermometer is going to have the word counts. I guess it's going to be incremented between 0 and 50,000 words. And as I do my word count for the day, they're going to update the count on the refrigerator, and Jordan's going to color in the thermometer to indicate how far I've gotten. So now that I've got my 4-year-old on my case, I don't think I'm going to be able to slack all that much, because I think she's going to really want to color in some lines, and I'm going to really have to keep my word count up. So we'll see how that goes. I'll also have to see if I can get some pictures and post it to Flickr, because I think this could be pretty freaking amusing. If you have any comments or feedback on the show, you can send it to me at nuketown@gmail.com. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get back to you during November, but I will certainly try.